Hello and welcome to another episode of Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney, on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Each week, Inside Education brings you interesting and insightful guests from the world of education to inspire and inform you about developments in teaching and learning. Podcasts of hundreds of previous episodes of Inside Education are available from seandelaney.com/podcasts. This week on the programme, I'm delighted to bring you more from the Irish Primary Principals Network, the IPPN, conference, which was held in City West Hotel at the end of January. Later in the programme, I'll bring you an interview with the Deputy President of the IPPN, Damien White. But first, I'll bring you inside an unusual stand I visited at the conference. I stepped inside and spoke to Amy Geraghty, Áine O'Donnell and their colleague Joanne about where we were. I first asked Joanne to describe it for us.
We're currently standing in the aquaculture remote classroom, which is an extendable truck that is essentially a mobile classroom that will travel around schools in Ireland and educate 5th and 6th class students about fish farming in Ireland and in the wider EU.
And what's the purpose of this experience?
The purpose of the experience stemmed from an EU project called Farmed in the EU, where the European Union wished to develop the aquaculture fish farming industry in Europe. And to do that, they recognised that people need to be educated about it, about what's going on and how we're producing food. So BIM picked up the project and ran with it and essentially have developed a day-long curriculum for 5th and 6th class students that will be delivered around the country in the coming years.
So it looks for all the world like a small prefab room with seats for children, and there's a screen, and what else is here?
We have a range of activities for the children to do. We have puzzles, we have a map reading module, we also have 360 degree visual 3D headsets for the kids so that they can get an experience of putting their head onto the water and seeing what it's like to swim through a mussel farm or a salmon farm in Ireland.
And is the goal to get people eating more fish, or is it broader than that?
It's broader than that. It's to eat more fish, but it's also to learn about the industries that are happening in our coastal and rural areas, and to appreciate when you're driving along the coast and you see some barrels out there or some trestles out there, what's going on, what that means to the local community, and what's actually happening onto the water. That it's not just what is that over there. We would like people to know more about the industry.
Áine, you're involved in health and nutrition, so what's your role in this project?
So basically we'll just be delivering this course. The first activity is like, what is aquaculture? We'll talk about the main species that are farmed in Ireland. So we'll be focusing on salmon, mussel and oysters, how they're farmed, where they're farmed. Then after the little lunch, then we'll be talking about the geography and the social environmental factors that influence aquaculture. Where I come in then is the health and nutrition then. So I will be obviously educating kids on the benefits of eating seafood in the diet and doing a kind of comparative analysis across like meat, poultry. We'll talk a little bit about nuts, lentils, you know, and just kind of showcasing how fish is highly nutritious and it offers multiple benefits. It's got minerals, vitamins and omega-3s.
And Amy, you're a marine biologist, so what's your contribution to the classroom?
Well, the earlier part of what Áine said, the where, the what and the how. I was lucky enough to start with BIM in their graduate placement. I was involved in a mussel project then. I've been kept on to talk now.
And how have children reacted to it so far?
Well, they haven't yet. We're starting on Monday with dry runs, and then in February we'll be out in the road. So hopefully, well.
The principals have very, very keen on it. We've got a very positive response so far.
And who developed the education side of it?
That was done. Joanne. That was a cooperative approach between BIM and H2 Educational, who are a
e-consultancy that work with developing professional development of teachers and also e-learning activities.
So we got professional educators in to help us with designing the curriculum, pass the curriculum and to link our ideas to the primary school curriculum, because in BIM we know fish farming, we don't know the curriculum, we don't know education, so that partnership with H2 is pivotal to developing the syllabus.
And it covers a lot of school subjects.
It does. I suppose fish farming is such a varied activity. When you think about the environment, geography, economics, health, nutrition. There's so many different factors. And also one of the things as well, there's so many different jobs available in this industry that have so many different skill bases, from engineering to marine biologists to professional divers to IT and whatever. This is an industry that will require in the future highly educated professional people to manage both fishing and in aquaculture. And we figure inspiring children at a primary school level is creating the seeds for the future workforce that we're going to need in this industry in Ireland.
And children who take part in it, they do it for a full day?
They do it for a full day.
So are you worried about being able to occupy them and keep them interested for a full day?
Not at all.
We've got lots of activities to keep them. So we're going to break it up between the PowerPoint and some interactive table activities. So we've got map reading. So once we've kind of given them a bit of background about the salmon, oyster and mussel farming, we'll ask them to plot the farm
locations. Yeah. Also, an advantage of the current setup we have, which is very modular, is that we can break it down and reconfigure it. So for every session, there'll be a different setup. The kids won't be sitting in the same configuration. The room won't be the same colour. So it will change every time they go out and come in. They'll be seeing a different setup in the classroom as a means of engaging them again and saying, oh, where did that come from? You know, because I think children, rather than putting them in, trying to deliver this in a normal classroom, we think would be a challenge for a day. But bringing in the truck, bringing in the different lighting, and being able to break it up and put it back together in different configurations will certainly help to engage the children for a longer period.
And it's being funded by Bordís Gabhairí, is that right?
Fully funded by the Government of Ireland and the EU under the European Maritime and Fisheries Fund. BIM administer that fund in Ireland. We are the ones that provide that grant aid, but the money is coming from the Government of Ireland and the EU.
And it's specifically for fifth and sixth class?
Specifically for fifth and sixth class, but we're reaching out to smaller schools as well, who we've had schools saying, you know, our fourth, fifth and sixth would only be 30 students. You know, would you take them all? And in that case, of course we can. As a teacher said to me earlier, she said, the kids' passport to these sort of things, if they can behave and engage, they can stay in the room. She goes, if they don't, we can take them out.
And if a school is interested in having you call to visit, are you still taking bookings?
Yeah, we're accepting expressions of interest on the website, which is www.aquaculture.ie. So it's aquaculture.ie. Once we have expressions of interest from a county, we will contact schools to say when we're hoping to be in your region, and we can organise a specific date.
And if your school is interested in a visit from the aquaculture remote classroom, you can log on to aquaculture.ie to find out more. One of the people commissioned with designing the educational aspect of the aquaculture remote classroom is John Hurley from H2 Learning, who has substantial experience in applying innovative technologies in education. I spoke to John and asked him what went into planning the educational experience of the aquaculture remote classroom.
Bordís Gabhairí, when they were developing the concept, came to us at H2 Learning to help to design the curriculum. So it was very important that the experience that the fifth and sixth class pupils have is tied in with the SPHE and the SESE curricula. So we looked at the strands and strand units that would actually feed into kind of what we were trying to message that we were trying to get across. So I suppose there are some key messages here. It's around sustainability. It's around what is aquaculture, the types of fish farming that there is in Ireland, but I think more importantly how that sustains the community. And you know how, you know, so we're looking at, okay, myself and my community, there's a very strong nutritional aspect to this as well, because you know, as we know, like fish is a very important part of a balanced diet. So we try to mix all of those in, but in a fun and interesting way. So that's why, you know, it's very much activity based, it's very much experiential learning, so that the young people, when they come in on the arc, that they, you know, they don't realise that they are learning.
That's one of the things that struck me, John, is that because the children are going to be working on it for a full day, it might be hard to keep their attention and keep their interest over a full day. What have you done in designing the educational experience that will help keep them engaged?
Well, I suppose we come very much from a, from a technology perspective. So we're using technology to
Teacher. You're also a teacher.
Absolutely. So it's trying to blend that technology, but hands-on learning. There's challenges and teamwork that they'll do. Some of it is presentation based. So when they leave at lunchtime and they come back after lunch, the whole arc is reorientated. So it looks completely different. There's different lighting. Things like that to keep their attention.
You started off with a blank page when you were asked to design this. How long did it take you to work on it?
Well, it's probably to get here today, it's about 6 months, right, since we started. We've been working with the Derek, our designer, who actually kind of put the visuals and all of that in place and helped build the challenges and that. So, from beginning to end. Now, and we're getting to the stage now where, we'll have pupils and we're testing it out with them. And that, so we're expecting that we may have to change some things and that. So I think it'll be an evolving process. I suppose as any learning experience is, it will be evolving. We'll be learning through this as well. We hope that Amy and Anya, are taking feedback on board, taking the reactions of the kids themselves on board, and maybe changing little things as we go along. So it's going to be an ongoing process, really.
And finally, John, what other work does H2 do in the education area?
Okay, so we work a lot with, for example, Science Foundation Ireland. So we run the Discover Primary Science and Maths on behalf of Science Foundation Ireland. So we would organise CPD for teachers in STEM after school. So we have a programme of 3 workshops that we do, and it's all about inquiry-based teaching and learning. We also have managed the Science and Maths Awards, right? So over 600 schools every year get the Science and Maths Award, and this year we're introducing a badge element to it as well. We also work closely with the Department of Education around the STEM policy framework, digital learning framework. We're involved in European projects as well. So we're looking at, for example, with Dublin City University, we're looking at the assessment of STEM at post-primary level. So we would see ourselves as very much as kind of a teaching and learning, and how using technology can enhance the teaching and learning experience.
And that was John Hurley from H2 describing ways in which technology can enhance the teaching and learning experience. Next on this week's programme, I'm delighted to bring you an interview with the Deputy President of the Irish Primary Principals Network, Damien White. Damien is a founder member of the Irish Primary Principals Network and has been principal of Scoil Hinnichill, Killy, County Offaly since 1994. He is passionate about GAA sports and anchored a weekend sports programme on Midlands 103 for 7 years. I began our conversation by asking Damien what for him had been the highlight of the 2019 conference of the IPPN up to the time we spoke.
The highlight for me has to be the positivity of the minister and the empathy that he seems to show. Now, to put that in context, I wouldn't be a party political supporter of his, but I just found that I was very impressed with him on a personal level. And I was impressed with his commitment and his, as I say, his empathy for teachers and for what we're trying to achieve. I said it to him on the stage. I said to him that in 20 years I haven't heard a better ministerial contribution at our conference. And it was only the second standing ovation I ever saw a minister getting. The first one was from Micheál Martin in very different financial times when money was being handed out freely. And he very much appreciated it, and I just liked his approach. I liked the way he was free to walk around and talk to people, that he put the people first. So that for me was the highlight. I mean, Adam Harris was a highlight as well, and our own two speakers, Porrick and David, did a fantastic job. I'm looking forward to this evening as well, but I think the fact that we've met a minister now who gets us, that was my highlight.
And do you think, I mean, the minister can talk the talk, but do you have confidence that he can actually deliver on what he promised and on the goodwill that he has shown towards principals?
Well, I mean, we're not unaware that he has to go back to a cabinet table and that he has to prepare budget submissions and so on and oversee all of that process. But I would feel that he's somebody that is going to bat for us. I know that you're always looking at the civil servants he brings with, and he didn't make any announcement or any absolute commitment, but I did get a great sense that he understands what the key issues are. And some of the key issues involve getting one day a week for teaching principals to administer. And the restoration of posts, AP1 and AP2 posts as they're known now, they would be my big issues, and they're the big issues of IPPN. And what I liked him saying, that he was committed to getting them done, and sooner rather than later. That was the way I felt that he spoke, and I think I'd be very willing to work with him on that.
And you're currently deputy president of the IPPN. When you become president, what will your own priorities be for that position?
First of all, I suppose, is it a bad word to say that I want to consolidate and to keep IPPN on the good track that it's on? I want to work particularly with principals of schools in isolated and small areas, or areas where you have small schools, to make sure that those people aren't overburdened. And at the same time, to support principals in the larger end, where the job is becoming, it's becoming a massive position really to hold. You're like a chief executive of a large company in a big school, and there's so many things that are crossing your desk, so many decisions to be made, so many key decisions around personnel. And you're a HR manager, you're a leader, you're supposed to be the leader of learning, you're the leader of a team of people who each have their own tasks to oversee. I want people to feel that the job can be done. And I identify very much with what Pádraig Clerkin said in his keynote speech, that you have your priorities, that you take everybody's suggestion, but you only approach those or deal with those suggestions when it's time to deal with those. These are our priorities for this year. And whether that's a huge school or whether that's a small school, these are your priorities. You're going to stick by those, come hell or high water, no matter who comes through the door. You have the support of your board of management. And then the job becomes doable. And that's the message that I'd be hoping that will go out to every corner, that we prioritise as staffs, working with our parents, working with our pupils. And we are still covering every subject, but we might just, it might just take till next year or the year after before we review that this other subject, because you can't do it all together. And to successfully implement something, you have to give it time to embed. We are pushing for a calendar of reform. And by a calendar of reform, you are looking for dates by which you might be asked to do something, after which then something else might be changed. But not everything pushed onto the one date, because nothing gets done or done well in that situation.
And is it your experience that has happened before, up to now?
Well, it's the experience of principals that they have been literally overburdened with initiatives. And initiatives are great. They're somebody's good idea, but everybody's good idea can't be implemented at the same time. People would talk about initiative burnout and initiative overload and so on. Each school has to be able to prioritise what needs attention for them and to give it that attention before they move to the next thing. If you get a lot of initiatives, the initiative runs out of yourself to deal with them all, because you're jumping from Billy to Jack. But if you get to, if you take something like the changes to the literacy curriculum, give time for those to embed. And I think the minister has recognised that in what he has said, by holding off on the implementation of the maths until the English is fully embedded. I'm not sure whether you'd agree with pushing maths back with your background, Sean, but it does give time for one to embed, so that the other, then you get a freer run at it. Otherwise, schools were on top of their heads trying to bring in things. Also, the calendar of reform, I'd be hoping that all the agencies will contribute to that calendar of reform, in that you're not getting something coming from TUSLA, or you're not getting something coming from another agency that you have to do on top of this, that or the other you have to do.
Or commercial agencies very often now as well.
Yeah. Oh, very much. Commercial agents or sporting organisations, however, you have to bring in the latest this or that. That everybody will contribute towards the thinking that we're trying to bring about, where you'll take on this thing, but it'll have to be in a sequence.
One of the priorities you've talked about is where teaching principals would be guaranteed one day a week where they could be relieved of those duties, and where they could, you know, attend to administration. How would that work out in practice if that was to be granted? Because, you know, I mean, like, would there be subs to cover that kind of changing of duties?
What has to happen is that permanent lists of substitute teachers to cover certain numbers of schools have to be organised. where it's organised on a pilot basis, as it is actually in my own area down in Offaly, and has gone on successfully for a number of years, whenever a teacher has, the teachers have course days, there's a teacher employed through one school, and that teacher covers several other schools on the days when the teachers have their course days. It's all mapped out in advance and so on. It would bring more teachers into the system, and I think when teachers can get a full-time job, they would take a full-time job, and there would be full-time jobs in this. And it might prevent the drain of people from going to the Middle East and other places, even though I can see the attractions for people too. But I think that over a year or two, nothing happens straight away, but over a year or two, I think that we would see a reduction in the number of teachers going abroad and people taking up these positions, because they would be full-time, they would be pensionable, they would be attractive.
Your own experience of being principal, when did you become a principal, and how have you found the experience of being principal?
I became principal in September 1994. I had gotten married just over 2 weeks earlier, and Offaly won the All-Ireland in the first week in September. So there were three major events, and I let my wife put them in order of importance, if that's all right. But I'm in my 25th year as a principal. I became principal at 28, so you that's good at maths, Sean, you can work it out. I have loved being principal, because I started out in a school, we had six teachers, 180 pupils. We now have 294 pupils. We have 18 teaching staff.
Is that the same school?
Same school. We have a unit for children with autism. We have 7 SNAs in the school. Like, there are, I think, 29 people working or earning a living from the school now, you know, in a small village. So I have seen it grow, and I suppose I've been part of its growth. I've employed everybody that's in the school now at this stage. My older colleagues have retired. I simply love the job, and I love that being part of a community where you are central to what goes on. I mean, we're in the ideal kind of a location. We're across the road from the GA field, up the road from the church, and the shop is around the corner. We have everything at our hand. It's a beautiful village, a village called Killy, just the right side of the Leash border, Sean. You're constantly involved in everything that goes on in the community, and the children are aware of the organisations and the work they do, whether it be Tidy Towns or whether it be the committee there to bring on to build a new community centre. They're part of everything. And last week the ploughing match was held in our local village, for beside our local village, and we had 80 ploughmen fed in our school hall. And I love that. I love the fact that the school is at the centre of the community. It's in a positive place in the minds and the hearts of the people who gladly support it.
So you're long enough then, Damien, as principal to have been principal before the IPPN was established and then to have been principal afterwards. What difference has the IPPN made for principals?
Yeah, I was actually a founding member. I was one of the few people who met in secret to found the IPPN. It has made an enormous difference. I go as far as saying I don't think I could be a principal now without the IPPN. When I came in 94, I suppose the culture was that you looked after your own ship and you did the best you could. It's even joked that if you thought that a teacher was going to vote in your school, that you'd turn your charts backwards so that they wouldn't steal your good ideas. I suppose that's more of a myth. But at the same time, now, if I have a very good policy that I've worked on something, and another school over the road wants it, or a school in the other end of the country wants it, I'll share it. And I in turn will take back a policy there and work on it and adjust it from their school or from a pot of policies that we have on our shared website. It takes a lot of the grunt out of making policy. And I mean, we have to have so many policies for things. That's just one angle, I would say, making it policies. We also have a helpline to support a principal if principals need advice on something. And it's confidential, and we've given help to hundreds of people who face all kinds of issues, whether they're HR or personnel or issues to do with curricular issues or boards of management or whatever it is, and we try and advise them the best we can. Also, I think IPPN holds a very strong place now in the education family, as a partner in education. We're consulted to get the real picture, I suppose, of what goes on. You'll get a better picture from principal teacher of what might just work than you will from most other agencies. We work very, very well with the INTO as well, and we would support all their campaigns and so on, and they would support ours. We respect each other's space and we operate in a good place alongside them.
Was there a teacher who had a significant impact on you?
My primary school, I was in a two-teacher primary school called Gurt na Mona, made famous by the Percy French song. We had a teacher called Maura Carr. Maura was an extraordinary teacher, a visionary, way ahead of her time. She is the mother of Marina Carr, the playwright, who would be very well known to theatre goers, The Abbey and so on. She has written a lot of seminal plays now, really, superb work. But Maura encouraged creativity. Of the time, we weren't immune to getting the odd scalp at the time, but we were all taught with love. I got a love of knowledge from Maura Carr, and I always sought to emulate her in some way. She was really fantastic. The curriculum didn't always matter to her. She did what she thought was appropriate for the day sometimes. You know, that with the timetabling of everything in a strict way, it mightn't have suited the way Maura taught, but she painted her own path. And that's what I'd like to see people doing, taking risks, and I probably have learned that from her. You learn from everyone you work with. I had a secondary school teacher called Dimphna Kyo, and my Irish wouldn't have been terribly good, but she got me through the Leaving Cert with an honour. That in itself is an achievement, but she taught me to love it. She also taught me history, which was my passion, and I would have great time for her as well.
And your own principalship, what would you say are the priorities for you as principal in your school? Like if the children or the teachers were asked, you know, like what's Mr. White really interested in, or what does he care about, what would they say?
I'd like to think that he cares about us. A photographer came in the other day to take photographs, and he said, "I love coming here because the children smile easily." Now, he just said it off the cuff, but I took it as a compliment for our staff that we're a very happy school. I take the terror out of the office. You know, if a child comes into the office to me for some reason, like as not to get a telling off, you know, at best we'll sort out whatever happened. But I like to think that we have a good relationship with the children. We have a very good relationship with their parents, that there's a trust there. Subject-wise, they know that I'm stone mad about history, that I'm a bit of a GA head as well, but I follow all sports, and that I love drama. I wrote a play about 1916, the events of 1916, a play called The Triumph of All Sorts. And like that, I shared it on the Principals Network, and several schools around the country put it on. I made it so that if there was a local hero or a local participant, they could mesh them in. So that got me a little bit of notoriety. But the children would associate me with the school show and Christmas plays and things like that. So I love that kind of thing.
And that enthusiasm for history, sports and drama came from the Deputy President of the Irish Primary Principals Network, Damien White, who I spoke to at their annual conference in January 2019. And it brings this week's Inside Education to a close.
Remember, you can listen back to this programme and over 350 others by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab.
My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from online bookstores and good local libraries. For now, this is Sean Delaney signing off. I'll be back at the same time next week. Thank you for listening.